connected with Take Two Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Take Two Radio. For email updates on future shows, follow at Blog Talk Radio. For previous episodes, upcoming guests, and more, visit Take2Radio.com.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Take Two Radio. I'm Pam, your host, and I hope everybody's doing well. I do believe I have Sabina with me today. Yes? No?
Yes,
maybe so?
Hello. I'm here.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Living, breathing, walking, talking, sort of. You know how that goes. But anyways, we better get to our guest because she is one busy, busy, busy woman. I cannot believe all the things that she does, and all in a 24-hour period. It just doesn't seem possible. But let's go ahead and welcome actress, producer, director, writer, and restaurateur, Adria, I hope I'm saying your name correctly, Tenner.
Yes, that's it. You did it. And I just got tired of listening to that list of stuff that I do.
I can imagine. Doing research and reading about all the things you do, I'm like, how the heck? And then I think about, well, you know, we all kind of do that. We have so much on our plate. We never think we're going to be able to do it, and we end up doing most of it, if not all of it.
Yeah, yeah, and we just get it done.
That's it. That's women for you.
Yes, I was going to say, I didn't want to be sexist, but I think it is a woman thing. And I don't mean that in any way to say that we're superior or anything like that. It's just that
No.
Mm-mm. We've had to do that because – that's just how our species has evolved. We're just responsible for so many things. So
Exactly. It's not, you know, like even when my mom was a mom, you know, she just stayed home and took care of us. And until we got a little bit older, then she got a part-time job. But, you know, as myself as a parent of four children that are grown now, I've come to do 60,000 times more than what she did.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, in a way, wasn't she bored? You know what I mean?
Yeah. My mom always likes to talk about this this cartoon in The New Yorker where this woman is sitting at the, you know, on the couch smoking, looking at a magazine, and there's two kids under the table, like, in a mess, and the dinner is burnt, and the thing is whatever. The iron is worn a hole in a shirt, and her husband comes home, and he's like, "What are you doing?" And she said, "Well, you asked me what I do all day, so I decided that to not do any of it, so you would know this is what happens when I don't do all that stuff that you think I don't do." I mean, also, I heard Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, do her talk on her Oprah Winfrey conference, and she was just saying how women, our generation of women, and every generation of women, it's hard to go back and like find a role model or an archetype because it just, you know, what I'm doing is so different than what my mother did and what her mother did,
right.
and it's mm-hmm. just there isn't somebody to look up to say this is how you do it, you know, the right way. It's just ever changing. So anyway, we do it, and I'm doing it, and I like this is what's going to happen, and I try to, we try to hire in the restaurants well so that we can delegate, and we just keep delegating more and more and more and more. It's mm-hmm. always a challenge to hope that the person that you're delegating to can be inside your brain and think the way you think, you know, and make a decision the way you would want the decision to be made. But it's really hard. It's really hard. But we'll do it.
In a certain way, and you like having control of any type of situation that you're in, to go ahead and delegate that to somebody, you're always probably thinking, should I go see? Should I go look? Should I go ask? It's not easy. I know it's not. And I know you have two restaurants, and I read there was going to be a third one. Did the third one open yet?
It's not open yet. It's about to open. We're any like maybe like 3 weeks away, I think. Yeah.
Wow. And that's going to be an Italian restaurant?
Uh-huh. Yes. Authentic Italian with pizza and pasta, grilled meat. Yeah, it's going to be really
wow.
good. The chef that we are partnered with at our restaurant, Barbrix, which is a wine bar in Silver Lake,
mm-hmm.
he used to own a pretty respected Italian spot in Santa Monica that had to close. His partner passed away, and he wasn't able to do both sides of the business. So that closed, and then
wow.
he, you know, a few jobs here and there, and then, you know, started working with us. And so he and my husband have had this dream to open an Italian spot on the east side. So that's what's happening. We're doing that.
Awesome. What's the name of the new restaurant?
The new restaurant's going to be called El Agua, and that directly translates to mean at water. At water
mm-hmm.
is the neighborhood in Los Angeles that will be the home of the restaurant. So
okay.
Cute little play on that name in Italian.
Yeah, definitely.
Atwater is it's a up-and-coming neighborhood. More and more families, more and more people are moving there. They have good schools. It's a great, you know, like walking neighborhood, and so they need a good restaurant.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And the other restaurant is called Cooks County, and
yeah.
I live in Cook County, so that's kind of something we have.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why the restaurant has that name. Our chef, Daniel Mattern, is from Cook County, Chicago, and it's kind of a little play on words. It's because it's him and his girlfriend, so it's two cooks, so it's plural. So we, you know, we just,
oh,
it's not the type of Chicago food.
That's
it sounds
pretty
like
cool.
Chicago, actually. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, that's how we got that name. I was trying to place your accent because I'm from Michigan and you guys sound Midwestern.
Well, I'm in Chicago, and Sabina actually is in Georgia, but she's from all over the
oh,
place
okay.
too. So
okay.
Yeah, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not from here originally, so I don't think I have an accent. I don't know what I sound like. So
okay, I'd have to. We'll have
yeah.
to talk more, Sabina. We'll have to figure it out what you sound like.
Yeah, definitely.
By the end of the show, she might pin you down.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into your acting part of your daily things. You started at the age of 12, which was quite young, but you played a boy in the movie Amateur. How did that come about?
Yeah, actually, I didn't start professionally until I was in my 20s, but my first role when I was in
mm-hmm.
my 20s was playing a 12-year-old boy. So I wasn't actually
12. Oh, you played it
much
okay,
older.
I see.
Yes.
Sorry, I had that a little bit wrong.
Oh, no. Well, that's very easy to do because it's a confusing situation that I would be playing a boy and I would be playing a 12-year-old boy when I was pretty much an adult. So, yeah, that was an interesting part. It was my first part, and it sort of christened my whole career, and I was a little confusing when I began because people – you know, agents and managers and casting directors are always trying to, like, fit you in a type. And so here I am, I get my first part, so they think, oh, Adrian is cast as a boy. So I started then being called in to read for, you know, all these lesbian roles, all these very butch, you know, Bull Dyke
mm-hmm.
roles, tough girls. And what no one understood was that I wasn't cast in that part because I was so butch. I was being cast in that part because 12-year-old boys are feminine. That was, you know, they're so gamine, and that was what
mm-hmm.
I was, pretty androgynous and gamine. So, but I found my way. The next part I got was in The First Wives Club. There was a role, I don't know if everyone remembers, but Diane Keaton's
mm-hmm.
daughter was a lesbian in that movie. So I auditioned to play that part, and they just said, no, she's just not, you know, she doesn't seem like butchy enough. But there was a role to play Diane Keaton as a young girl in college. So I got that part. And so then they started to realize, like, oh, Adria's really more feminine. Let's see what we can do with that. that's kind of what happened.
Well, I was going to ask you about playing young Annie, because Fur's Wife's Club is one of my all-time favorite movies, and playing with three such great actresses. I mean, did you realize at the time that they were so, you know, they're icons of the movies?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I was excited. We were all excited. The thing is, we didn't get to work with them, really, because the day that we were working, they weren't there because we were playing them, you know? But yes, of course. I mean, I felt so honored to play Diane Keaton. I spent a long time studying all her films so that I would get all of her mannerisms and everything down and correct, and her, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah, it was pretty exciting. We were very, very excited. And it was a huge movie. Scott Rudin and his producing, it was a big deal.
Yeah, and you did it well. I mean, I could watch that movie over and over and over and never get tired of it. It's just such a great movie, and I absolutely love who they chose to be in it and play those parts. I think it was perfect for everybody.
Yeah, they were great. It was really great. The casting director did a really great job.
Definitely. Now, I also know that you were in another huge fan favorite, which is Mad Men, and that's based in the 60s, and I know you probably weren't even born then. And you were in The Artist, and that's another old-time, you know, history movie. So how do you research to do that? I mean, do you just go ahead and watch different movies of those eras?
I was raised, my mother always wanted me to watch these classics, so I feel like it's sort of in me already. But I do tend to do a lot of period stuff. I think, I don't know why, but that's in my type. I guess I feel very, maybe antique is the word. I don't know. I just have that. I do tend to play in these period pieces. Fort McCoy, which is playing in the theater now, takes place in, you know, the 40s. The Artist is the 20s. Mad Men's the 60s. It's just something I get cast as. I just look at the period and the clothing, I think, and the underclothing also is something that really, for me, gets me into the character, how my body's being held. You know, in the 60s, they had those girdles and stuff, and the pointy bras and all that. I don't know what it is. And the shoes, all those things are really important for, you know, the line of the clothing. I feel like what I wear really does affect me. I don't know if it affects my performance, but it helps me. I feel like it helps me be that character. So,
lots of makeup and the eyeliner and the blue eyeshadow and all that stuff.
Totally. Totally.
And all those things eventually come back. And like when my daughter will buy something, look at what I got new. I'm like, well, I wore that when I was younger. No, you didn't, Mom, you know, that kind of thing. So you always hang on to your old clothes as long as you fit into them.
Exactly. I do. I keep everything. My husband thinks I'm cuckoo. But, you know, if I throw something away, then, like, a year later I'll be called to go on some audition where they'll want, you know, like, 80s outfits or whatever, the stuff I just threw away. So I just keep everything.
Right, right. Now, one question I have about The Artist is, I can't imagine how hard it must be to do a film without talking at all. How do you do that?
Well, I mean, we could talk. It wasn't like we weren't allowed to speak, but no one would hear what we said. I think more the question is, how do you tell a story without words? And what I have discovered is the reaction, so whatever's happening is important, but the reaction to whatever is happening is maybe even more important. And so to really, really be specific about how you see something, that's going to really tell the audience, like, this is what you're seeing. So, and that, my character, especially in The Artist, does a lot of that. I'm constantly behind, sorry, John Goodman. Oh my gosh, spacing John Goodman's in. I'm constantly behind John Goodman, you know, looking at him, wondering what his reaction is going to be, and secretly reacting to what he's looking at. So it was really fun. I do a lot of commercials, and I feel like the roles that I've had, even on television, are often roles where there's a really specific reaction. I don't know if everyone saw You Don't Mess with the Zohan, but my character in that movie is reacting to Adam Sandler giving this little boy the sleeper pinch. And the whole scene is in my reaction to him. You know, like, that is the whole scene. Is that's what's funny about Adam Sandler's character, is how do all these people that he comes across, how do they perceive him? Because he is so hilarious. So what's funny about the character in the movie is how other people react to him. So I tend to get a lot of those kind of things when they need a funny reaction to something. I tend to get that, and so I wasn't surprised when I got The Artist, because that was all about, you know, telling a story with your facial expression and my reaction watching that. So
yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't realize they have so many facial expressions. So you have to know that you do that at certain points.
Yeah, and just be aware of it and be crafting it. I think it was a little nerve-wracking for us at the beginning. I think John Goodman even was a little nervous about it, because there was no script. It just wasn't what we were used to. You know, we weren't saying any lines. So, like I said, we were allowed to speak. It's just there wasn't anyone, you know, rolling sound or anything. That wasn't going to be in there, so... We got it. I think we did a good job.
Yeah,
now,
definitely.
It was very successful. I was actually wondering, because I actually saw The Artist and I absolutely loved it. And I never seen any of the, you know, those kind of movies from back in the day. So I kind of want to go check out some of them. But it was really interesting. And, you know, I could tell that, you know, the facial expressions really do, you know, tell a story just as well as you know, lines and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of wondering, if they didn't have lines written down, though, they had to have, like, your actions as far as what you're supposed to be portraying on your facial expressions and stuff like that. Is that all they really had for you, or?
Yeah, the script was really like a short story. It was all what they would call, like, when you look at a script, there are the action description, the scene headings, which is like interior bedroom night, you know, and then there's a description of the scene, like what's happening. There's a bed and there's a couple in the bed or whatever. And then there's the dialogue. Because The Artist was pretty much no dialogue, I mean, there were some, there was a little bit of dialogue, which they did with, cards with you know, subtitles, I guess. But for the most part, it was just action description. I don't know. I wouldn't say that it was written by Michelle Hazanavicius, the director, that he did a lot of explaining how the actor would portray it, like, you know, that I think was more up to us. But you know, that was how the story was communicated to the actors, with just action
right.
description, what was going to actually happen. And you know, when you're in film school, I never went to film school, but in acting school too, I started out, we did a lot of scenes, but without dialogue. That was how we started. We would do a scene where, you know, we'd come into a room and do something without talking. And it's the same for filmmakers when they're starting out in film school. Most of your films, you know, most of your projects in the beginning don't have dialogue. It's very powerful to be able to tell a story just by pictures, just by, you know, photographing what's happening and not having, you know, an actor speak and say, like, this is what's going on. So it is a really artful form of storytelling, I think.
Mm-hmm. You know, with everything that you're talking about,
oh, I think I lost you for a second.
Stuff too.
I think I lost you for a second.
Yeah,
okay.
I lost you as well. Try that again.
Oh, sorry. I was saying, with all the things you're just talking about, I can see that you would make a good director and a producer because you understand everything that has to go on within a film besides just the acting part.
Well, that's nice of you to say. I mean, it definitely does help. I mean, I really try to educate myself and know, because I feel like, you know, it's especially, you know, film and theater are so collaborative, television, those are all such collaborative things. And I think you just would naturally do better if you have an understanding of what everyone is doing. It's the same in the restaurant business. You know, mm-hmm. My husband and I have waited tables. He's been a busboy. He's, you know, done a lot of jobs in the restaurant, so it makes us good at, you know, managing our staff. I think it's really important. So
that's so
I
true.
I always try to, that's, yeah. I really
that's
think
so
it's
true.
Important.
I can see how that goes.
It's so
both
similar.
Sides when you work both sides.
Yeah, I think
well,
that the people you're working with do more too. You know, our staff respects us more. I think that people respect me more if they know I have an appreciation for what they're doing.
That's so true. That's so true, because you can't have a waitress, you know, be yelling at you like, now you know.
I think I'm losing you again.
Oh, no. What's going on? I'm not moving. I'm not doing anything, and I'm not on a cell phone. Oh, my gosh. Well, let's go and talk about the award-winning film Fort McCoy that you're in as Lolly. And it's about a real story, a real-life situation. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah. It's about it's told through the eyes of a little girl whose father has been denied entrance into the war. He's not able to fight because he's a heart murmur. By trade, he's a barber. So he really wants to serve his country. So he enlists as a barber on the Fort McCoy base. So he moves his family, his wife and his two kids, to this base. And they live pretty much within arm's reach of some prisoners of war, German and Japanese soldiers that have been captured and brought back to this base in Wisconsin. It's a really, really beautiful story. I love that it's told through the eyes of this little girl, written by a woman, directed by a woman. It's just a really, really beautiful piece that I was really happy to be a part of. I met Kate doing an episode of Mad Men. She and I were on the first episode that we did together, The Marriage of Figaro, which was the third episode of the first season. We just bonded because I also was writing and had aspirations to be a filmmaker. So she shared her script with me, and I read it, and I just, you know, really wanted to be a part of it. And there was a role that she felt would be right. So to Wisconsin, and I made this film with her. My character is a Lolly is a switchboard operator on the base, and Ruby Stern, who is played by Kate Connor, the writer director, she is the wife of the barber, who is played by Eric Stoll. And so she gets a job in the switchboard, and so I kind of show her the literal ropes of being a switchboard operator. So it's just a really, it's really cool. I'm in the movie here, you know, here and there. I get to have several scenes, be a part of it. So it's really, really great.
It's really definitely, it's definitely a movie that I'm interested in seeing, and I know Sabina feels that way as well, because just from what we read on it, it sounds very interesting. And I actually like movies that have some type of real history to it, which this does, but I was really before you got this role.
I just did not hear what you said.
Oh my gosh, what's going on with my phone? This is so strange. Can you hear me now?
I can. It's like it fades out and it comes back.
I've never had this problem before. What I was saying is that Sabina and I both find this movie very interesting, but what I was most shocked about was finding out that there was actually a prisoner of war camp in Wisconsin. Is this something
that
you knew? Did you, didn't know about it before you got the role?
I didn't know. Well, I read her film, so I knew about that, but not before being acquainted with the material. And I have, you know, been sharing my experience about making this film with a lot of people, including my agent in New York. And he had no idea either. I think it's something a lot of people didn't know. It's really, really interesting. I think it's a fascinating subject.
It is. It really is, because you hear of prisoner of war camps in other countries, but you don't think of it being in your own.
Right.
And I'd like to look into more myself to find out.
Yeah, totally.
And then also for our listeners, Kate Connor, the role that she's playing is actually her grandmother's real life. So that makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, it's really, really, really interesting to think about the fact that this is a true story and told by a family member. And it's really neat that when the credits roll, all of the actors are credited, and alongside their names are pictures of the actual person from Kate's family album. It's really neat.
Oh, wow.
Did you get to spend time with any of the real life people to do this? You know, besides Kate?
I didn't get to spend time with the real life people. I just got to spend time with Kate and listening to her anecdotes. And, a lot of people have, including the person who inspired Kate to write this film, have said, you know, this is even more than a 2-hour movie. This is a television show. It could really, cause there's so many anecdotes, so many interesting things that would be really fascinating. So, you know, hopefully someone will get behind that as a concept too, because I just think it would be really, really neat to go back and look at this period. And we seem to be, I think we're pretty interested in this country in the past. I mean, Mad Men was this big success, and, you know, Boardwalk Empire is a big hit. So I think that we're down for that. So hopefully somebody will get behind that and take the ball and run with it, or let Kate run with it, because I think it would make a really interesting... So it's something I'd like to see every week and learn more and more about. I would.
Yeah, the TV series. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds like it would be fun too, for me, because my grandfather fought in World War II, so it'd be interesting to learn more about some things from that era. So, Actually, the movie is opened in select theaters in August, and more theaters coming this month and next. Were you able to attend any of them yet, or will you be?
I got to attend the screening in Los Angeles. I don't think I'm going to get to go anywhere that's remote because I am so slammed at the moment. We're opening this other restaurant, so I can't really leave town at the moment. And I also have a film that I have just finished, a short film that I'm going to be going to festivals with. And then there's a feature that I'm also developing at the moment. And so there's just a lot of things to keep me busy and kind of either keep me out of town on that mission or in town on a mission here. I don't think I'll be able to travel around to the screenings with Kate, which would be really exciting.
Yeah. Well,
who knows? Maybe something will overlap. Yeah.
Yeah. So where can our listeners see the list of theaters it will be played in?
If they go to the MontereyMedia.com, Monterey Media is the distributor. I think if you just Google Fort McCoy Theater Film, that should come up. But the Monterey Media website is where people can find the distribution where it's playing. It's playing in it's playing in Arizona, South Carolina, Utah, many theaters in California, Vermont, Wisconsin, many theaters in Wisconsin, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Maine, and New York.
And Chicago.
Well, yeah. Good.
Is it playing in
Chicago?
September 25th, Thursday, at the Wilmette Theater in Chicago.
Well, then maybe this is the updated list. Maybe you guys have a more updated list because I don't see that on here. I'm so glad.
Yeah, I got that from the publicist where they have those openings. It's just there's so many of them to tell that I couldn't tell all of them on the show, so it's better to have a link to go to.
That's great.
That's
excellent. I'm so glad to hear that it's playing all over. That's good. Good.
Yeah, I'll definitely look for when and where it's playing here in Georgia and go, I want to see it. I saw the trailers and it looked really good.
It is really beautiful.
So what is it like to watch yourself on screen?
It's okay. I mean, it's a little like, I don't know, it's a little like having fingers scratched down a chalkboard a little bit. I try to be objective about it. I try to look at it like it's not me, it's, you know, somebody else, and, you know, but also learn from what I'm doing. Sometimes I got to say, I hope this doesn't sound annoying, but sometimes I think, God, that was way better than I thought it was going to be. I think I'm surprised that I did as well as I perceive on the screen, because at the time I felt like, ugh, it was horrible. So, That seems to be more and more how I feel. I do a lot of taped auditions. There's a lot of work in Louisiana, so I've been sending a lot of tapes to the Southeast, and I get to watch. So that way, I get to watch all my auditions. When you just go to an audition with a casting director, you don't get to watch it back. But I am often pleasantly surprised. I'm often like, oh, I don't need to do that again. That was good. I'm sending that one. So, I mean, but that's after a long, long time of feeling like, oh, God. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it's hard, you know, and I think it's so hard to not look at the flaws in my physical, you know, body and my, you know, my face or, you know, whatever, like, oh, that I can't stand when I smile and my lip goes that way or I look like I'm chewing gum and, you know, just stupid things, but. You know what? It's fine. Really, to me, I want to tell a story. I want to be collaborating. I want to be doing a play, making a television show, and be telling stories and conveying, you know, honoring this writer who wrote whatever it is we're working on. That's what I want to do. So I just, you know,
right.
Let all that crap go out of my brain. I try not to be too shallow and be thinking about how I look. It's hard.
Yeah. Well, we're all our own worst critic for sure, you know, but I don't know how I'd feel if I were to ever see myself acting, which I wouldn't do anyway, but listening to myself talk is not easy. But I, you know, I like to listen back to, you know, interviews that I do. So I can sort of understand what you're, where you're coming from on that.
I'm sure it's very similar, very similar.
Yeah. So you've also produced your first film called Smothered, a film by John Schneider, which is another wonderful man. How did the two of you get together for this film, and what is the movie about?
I met a man named Doug Blake, who produced The Sessions. His movie, The Sessions, was kind of coming onto the scene as the artist was, you know, finishing up. So we met at an event. He's a producer, and I just decided I really wanted to learn how to produce. It's so frustrating as an actor because we just have so little control over what we're going to do. I was just getting tired of waiting around for someone to pick me, you know, to audition for something and to maybe get a part in it. I wanted to learn how to make my own stuff. So he had met John because they worked on a television show together, and John is an amazing writer, really, really amazing writer, and really has always wanted to be a writer, director, filmmaker more than he's ever wanted to be an actor. So Doug, you know, just decided that he was going to make one of his movies. The movie that we all thought we were going to make hasn't happened yet. Instead, we made this movie, Smothered. But I don't know if I really fully answered your question. So when I met Doug, I thought, I want to do this. I want to, whatever your next project is, I want to work on it. So will you tell me when you're working on something? And he did. He said, but it's in Louisiana. And I said, it doesn't matter. I'm going. I have an agent there. I have a place to live. I'm going with you. So I went down and worked on this movie. Smothered is a terrific, terrific idea. It's about these five horror icons. They play themselves. R.A. Mihailoff is in it, who's from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Don Jenks, who's from hold on, I want to get all this stuff right. I can't say it off the top of my head because I'm a ding dong. Hold on. Don Jenks is from oh gosh, my brain's not working today.
We all have those days.
Okay, so he's from Halloween. Kane Hodder is from Freddie, the one with Freddie with the mask.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm butchering this pitch, aren't I? I'm terrible. This is horrible.
it's okay.
And then there's Bill Moseley from Nightmare on Elm Street. I've done this much better when people ask, what's Smothered about? So it's these five horror icons. They are playing themselves, and they are being haunted by the girl instead of the other way around, where the girl's being haunted by one of these guys.
Oh,
she's
cool.
Haunting them. So it's really cool, and it really, it really humanizes them. I think it's a side that, you know, their fans will see this really human side of them that they never get to see. Just really, really a sweet idea. But it's, you know, hilarious and gory as well. So all of that stuff that all those horror people like to go see, they'll be satisfied, but then they're also going to get this really cool backstory, subtext, full movie from John, because he's such a great writer.
Mm-hmm. So that's the type of movie that I'd be watching through my fingers but laughing at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's suspenseful. It's not as gross as Texas Chainsaw Massacre and all that stuff. It's not quite so horrific as all of those.
Okay,
it's just
good.
A little more like spooky, scary kind of. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm not really big on those kind of movies either.
Yeah, no, it's hard to watch. I'm really into comedies and drama and things like that, and suspense as well. But watching something just outright gory, I can't do, yet I can watch a medical show with them cutting somebody open. So go figure.
What?
I get that.
Yeah, good.
I totally get that. I'm the same way.
Well, before we let you go, you have two more movies on IMDb. I don't know if you're able to talk about them yet, but there's Golden Thread and D Train. Can you tell us anything about those?
Yeah. Golden Thread is a film that was made in the AFI lab. It is directed by a Norwegian woman named Jade Haram Aksnes, which I'm probably not saying that right. She's an AFI fellow, and produced by her partner, Rachel Alterman, who's also an AFI fellow. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about that also because my short film, Cracked, is written and directed and produced by a woman, myself. And it has a young female protagonist, a young girl who's 9. And so does Jade. So that's really interesting. And there's another movie that Talian, who is the star of my short film, Talian Wright, she was in another film made by an AFI fellow called The Father. And it's the same thing. It's written, directed, and produced by a woman with a young female protagonist. I just really think that's cool that they're, I don't know if that's just a coincidence, these films are on my periphery, or if this is some kind of movement, but it feels like it might be some kind of movement, which I'm really jazzed about. D-Train is super exciting. That is a film that stars Jack Black, Catherine Hahn, James Marsden, and Mike White. It's a comedy, ooh, obviously, it's not obvious, and it's written by the writing team, Andrew Mogul and Jared Paul, who wrote Yes Men, but this is their directorial debut, so we're just waiting for that to be finished. It's just really, really funny, and it's really risky, and I think pretty genius. My opinion.
Well, I love James Marsden, so that works for me.
He's so great.
It sounds good.
Great.
Great people in it.
Yeah. Yeah, really great.
I'll definitely have to check all those out.
Yes, definitely.
Go on the list.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have to watch out for it. And whenever you know when and where these movies are going to be, if you tweet or Facebook them, just let us know so that we can, you know, talk about it and then go see it.
Definitely.
I actually have one last question for you. I was curious about your one-woman show, Strip Search, because I actually watched a little clip on your website. It was fun. And I was curious about that in the memoir that you are, it's coming up, I guess. It's not quite ready yet. And if you'd be taking the show on the road or not at some point.
Well, I have taken it on the road. I might take it on the road again. I don't have any specific plans to do that. I've been working on the book, but that has been moved to the back burner because of some other things that have been, getting some attention. So I want to focus on that stuff, the feature and my film, my short, and then obviously this new restaurant. So probably if and when that book does get finished, I would love to take that back out. You know, like that, I would love to do a book tour and have the show be part of that. That would be so exciting and fun. It's a very, very physical show, which, you know, culminates in a mm-hmm. full-on pole dance. It's not an easily traveled show because not every theater has a pole. It's definitely not a pole. So I'm saying, you know, you should just tour it around all the strip clubs, which is an idea. Definitely an idea.
Yeah.
And it would probably work really well. But so, yeah, so I had a lot of fun doing that. And it's just I can't even explain how rewarding the feeling of delivering, you know, speaking your own material to an audience and having them react to it. Just so fun, especially when they laugh, because it is a comedy. So that's just so terrific. I'd love to do it again.
Yeah,
so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that would be great, because I would definitely go see that and be interested in seeing the book, too. So, yeah, just let us all, you know, let us know.
Okay.
So.
Now that you've said that, now I feel a responsibility to make it happen.
And
no
just
pressure.
So you're aware, on my website we have an author section where we put up books by our guests, you know, so we'll be very willing to put that on there once it's done, but... No.
I think we lost her again. Are you there, Sabina?
Yeah. Pam, I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Pam?
There
yep,
you go.
There
hello? You
are.
Oh, my
You're
gosh.
Here.
Well, I was saying no hurry for the book, but we do have on take2radio.com an author section for our guests that have books out, and I'll put it up there once it's done.
Great. Great.
So now I'm going to let you go before my phone. I don't know what's wrong with it. Now I have to find out. But I want to thank you so much for spending time with us and telling us about your movies and everything about yourself. It was such a great pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. You too.
Yes.
Great
yeah,
to talk
agree.
To you guys.
Thanks a lot. Have a good night.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I almost feel like I cut her off too short, but I don't know what the heck is wrong with my phone. I never had this issue before. Are you hearing me talk now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I don't know, but...
That's so strange. It's so strange. Well, just real quickly for our listeners, be sure to follow Adria on Twitter at Adria Tenor. And that's spelled A-D-R-I-A-T-E-N-N-O-R. She also has a Facebook page at facebook.com/AdriaTenor. And her website is adriatenor.com. Be sure to look up, you know, the theaters to find out where the movie is playing at for Fort McCoy, because I think this is going to be a hugely successful movie. And I would love to see it turned into a TV series, or at least maybe a two-parter or three-parter, you know, type of movie that they have on Lifetime these days.
Mhm. Yeah. It looks really good. I don't know if you saw the trailer, but I found the trailer.
Yeah.
It looks awesome.
Yeah, and I love, you know, movies that are based on real life situations, and I think you learn a lot about your own country a lot of times when you watch these things, you know, or whoever the role is based on. So I think that's really, really interesting. So with that, I'm going to say thank you, Sabina, for joining me, and thank you to the listeners. I totally apologize for my phone. I honestly do not know what's going on with it. But our next show will be, October 7th. I think I have one before that, one or two, but I'm waiting for confirmations. But follow us on Twitter at Take Two Radio and also at Take Two Radio Crew, and check out our Facebook at Take Two Radio and our website take2radio.com for upcoming guests and more. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night, Sabina. Have a good night, everybody, and we'll see
you
again soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.